taking that information that I learned and sharing it with others and being able to teach and explain helps me become a better programmer too, because all the stuff I internalize, I have to then explain to someone else, and a prototype is worth 1,000 meetings.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 22. Are you prototyping your designs? If not, I'd almost guarantee that by the time you're done listening to this episode, you will be inspired to go headfirst into it. Today, I got to interview prototyping visionary Jordan Dobson. We dove deep into what I believe has become an imperative part of our design process. They say a prototype is worth 1,000 meetings, and whoever they are would be absolutely right. So without further ado, fasten your seatbelt, because things are going to be moving in my inspiring interview with Jordan Dobson. Jordan Dobson is a hybrid designer, developer, and prototyping visionary with over 17 years of experience. He brings motion into visual, product, and UI design to build amazing digital products. He's a freelancer currently contracting at Skype. He's worked at Microsoft and is also the co-founder of the Seattle Framer.js Meetup. Back in the day, he could ollie off a launch ramp clearing 4 trash cans and land it. Wow. Welcome, Jordan. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you.
So you can't do that anymore?
Probably not, no. I've ridden a bit around with my son, and I don't have the skills I used to, but yeah.
Well, it'd probably be a guaranteed trip to the ER, right, at this point?
Yeah, or scraped knee or something.
That's awesome. Well, now you can live vicariously through your son, right, in those ways?
Yeah, we try. He's venturing out into some things I haven't explored yet, like BMX bike racing and things like that. He's like, 4 right now?
Oh, so wow.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That is awesome, man. Well, very cool. So I'd like to start the show out by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
So I live out in the Pacific Northwest. I've been here since around 97, grew up my childhood in the Midwest, which was a huge difference compared to between the two, and have a wife, 2 kids. I have 2 cattle dogs at home. Was born in Wisconsin, and I spent a lot of my childhood in suburbs of Chicago and South Bend, Indiana. And let's see, what other things? I definitely enjoy, like, I have what I think around 8 vintage mopeds that I like working on. Kind of jumped into that after co-working locally in the city, and it's in Tacoma here, and driving there, it was costing me like $300 a month to park. So I found this sweet moped that I would take, because it's a 2-mile drive, but I could park it on the sidewalk, so that was pretty awesome. It saved me a lot of money. It was after 2 months I had recouped all my expenses on buying that bike. So,
nice. And
play indoor soccer 3 days a week. I'm a goalkeeper and love shutting down people's dreams of scoring goals on me. I played a lot of ice hockey in the Midwest, and I came out here, and people are like, "What's ice hockey?" So I moved from goalie in ice hockey to goalkeeper in soccer. Been doing that for 5 years, and funny thing, my first 4 months playing, I think I broke my pointer finger on my right hand, which was an interesting first day that I had at Expedia.
Oh, wow.
I walked in with like this huge contraption on my hand, and
at least it wasn't the middle finger.
They're like, "So can you type?" I'm like, "I think so."
Yeah, Siri, little help.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
And I grew up in like the Midwest. Like I said, there was a huge school there, like almost close to 4,000 students, and they had an amazing elective system. So like I was able to take graphic design, like 1 through 4, and graphic arts and video production and like astronomy, and they had their own planetarium and things like that. So then I moved out here, and I had like art and shop, which was kind of disappointing because I moved my senior year, but that really kind of got me into what I do today, got me started and interested in
Wow. Deal. Left and right brains going all the way back there.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Pretty awesome. And when you mentioned the mopeds, I could not help but think of Sweet Chuck from Police Academy movies. I'm sure yours goes a little faster than that, though, I imagine.
It tops out about 42 miles an hour.
Right on. Tell us your origin story, Jordan. What inspired you to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
I've always liked tinkering with things and like just creating and building things. Even my parents, like growing up, my dad bought a house that where the builders went bankrupt, and we had no carpeting on the floors, no flooring. It was just, you know, plywood and stuff, and got to watch him and help him build and finish the entire house, install electrical, you know, do all those things. And, you know, he was always busy with his hands, and I was always there helping him. There was never a weekend that there wasn't a project, which was kind of a bummer at some points, but, you're like, I just want to get out and play, but I'm also, you know, gained a lot of, thinking, I think, you know, how to approach problems. And then, like I said, from my high school, getting really involved with design and I think mostly video production. Then when I moved out here, thankfully my art teacher realized the scenario I came from, and during art class was like, sure, you can go in the computer lab and work on design projects on your own, and which was pretty amazing. From there, I got an internship through a community college. Wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. Was just still playing in a band, and that's where a lot of my initial connections came from and opportunities. And got an internship with a startup locally doing a lot of flash animation work and a lot of SEO stuff. They were trying to build up their photo library that they were working on. And Bubble Burst. I'm trying to find work. I had a friend in a band that needed someone to do animation work for this small three when I joined, company called Dayfather. And we were working on a lot of flash animation for games for like Wizard of the Coast and just kind of more game oriented projects. And that lasted, I think, maybe 6 to 8 months or so. And from there, I just kind of realized, hey, I can do this on my own, and started looking, connecting up with the contacts I had through the music industry. And it was a lot of, Jordan, can you do this? And I'm like, yes, I can do what, you know, kind of, I will do it. I don't know if I can do it. I know how to do it yet, but I will learn, and I will put, you know, ended up putting a lot of time and effort into figuring those things out. So from there, gradually brought on more projects and decided to start a company, a design and development firm, more creative based. And from there, just kept rolling on and bringing on more employees. We ended up having two startups and, you know, getting a huge office downtown Seattle. And we did that for about 9 years before we closed that down. I kind of feel like that was my college years. I literally worked on hundreds of projects and handled everything from just working through an idea to having to build the entire thing and ship it. Did branding, motion graphics, lots of more like creative. It was for like artists that were releasing albums a lot. So we would have to find ways to kind of do experimental things and just keep people interested, engaged in the site as long as possible. Cause the whole idea was a lot of times to have them listen to the albums and listen to the music. So it would be games or like Easter eggs or puzzles you'd have to figure out that would unlock more content or more songs that you could listen to. And a lot of that was driven just back then, by forums and people sharing the things they discovered. And in that was kind of really where I did a majority of my motion work. And in that I got, well, artists or musicians in particular are very, very picky. And I think over those 5 years, I kind of got burnt out on it and trying to like please them and doing all this amazing stuff and having them be like, no, that's not really what we're into. Mm-hmm. And the T-Mobile Sidekick came out, those phones, and a lot of artists had those too, and they were touring, and it was a way to like kind of communicate with their agents or family back home. It was so we built a product on that, and that was really the first time I started doing like designing in code, because the way the Sidekick worked, it would take your web page and dismantle it and try and arrange it in a way that made sense. A lot of table-based layouts back then, so trying to put it back together in a way that made sense for that small screen. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't really jump into Photoshop or Illustrator and know what the output would be, right? So yeah, it was a lot of trial and error, just reloading, refreshing, trying new layouts and having them fail completely. Mm. So that's really where I started to get my introduction to, you know, writing designs and code, which is primarily how I approach things today. And then through that, like, just being on a small team and having a smaller company of my own, I picked up Ruby and learning that to help my developers out so I could see the design details in our work all the way through, where, you know, most engineers, I think, like, and developers, there's a few in there, but aren't necessarily as design oriented or design minded. And some of those details would start to fall off. So I kind of made a point to step over into their world a little bit and, do what I could to improve the overall experience for people. Then after our company closed down, that was like 2010, and I started doing contracting, and I've been doing that ever since with numerous companies like Expedia, Groupon, and then a couple different Microsoft companies like Sway and OneDrive, OneNote, and right now I'm on Skype. So
quite the backstory, my friend. You've definitely been around the block.
Yes, I've been.
So I totally appreciate that, though. You've been able to see how much this field has evolved, and it's kind of neat to be able to reflect on how different things used to be, and to kind of take those skills, the things you've learned, like even from building with your dad, right? Like learning, watching him, observing him, and then learning those things, and then applying that whole problem solving principle into your work today. It's pretty awesome. Sure. I wish I'd listened to my dad more when he was trying to show me how to like change the oil and stuff.
This episode is sponsored in part by User Testing, the fastest and most advanced user experience research platform on the market. There's nothing like watching and hearing from people using your product, and that's exactly the insight User Testing gives you. You get valuable feedback on websites, mobile apps, and prototypes from real people in your target audience. Set up your study in minutes and get video, written, and audio feedback in an hour. You can try User Testing for yourself for free by visiting peak.usertesting.com. Peak gives you a free 5-minute test on any website or app. Jordan, who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
Superhero in my work? I really, really like Pascal Da Silva, his work, and his motion and how he, is kind of focus on transitional interfaces. A lot of it, I think, for me, it helps having those, like, I know from the experience, I know those things, but having someone out there writing them and getting them absorbed by other people and something I can point to help explain where I'm coming from is awesome, because there's a lot of the details in there that help the overall user experience for projects that, just kind of get missed, I think, or aren't thought of early enough that it's hard to introduce them later on in the projects.
If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
It would definitely be something where I'm using my hands, making something. I'm not sure what it would be, though. I feel like it would probably be involved in like construction or being an engineer in some way. My great grandfather was always about, when he would talk to me, he's like, when you grow up, you need to be an engineer. That's where the, you know, things are headed, like building things. And so it would probably be along those lines. But then on the contrast, the roots of my family are farmers, and there's something that's really interesting about having all that weight of your job, like on you every day, right? Like you get to make your own schedule. You have to make your own food. You have to, it's all pretty much on you just to like cultivate the land. And that's something I think would be also interesting to me, like just growing up and seeing that happen and kind of how the family dynamics work. Like my family hasn't moved from that same plot of land for forever, like long time. And yeah, I think that would be something super interesting too.
That's awesome. I admire that a lot. And I think that farmers don't get enough credit for the work they do. Without farmers, we really wouldn't have a lot of food to eat, would we?
No, that's very true.
Resources like that. So I appreciate that a lot. Let's talk about life-altering experiences and get into your transformation. Now, every superhero has some sort of life-altering experience that helps guide their purpose and leads them to a transformation where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for the greater good. Now, certainly a significant among those is failure. Now, failure is not something we like to talk about or put on our LinkedIn page, but it's unquestionably one of life's greatest teachers. Now, could you tell us a story about what's been the biggest one in your career?
Sure. Yeah, I think it probably would have been the design firm I had. I for about a good 9 years put everything I had into it, and that was really hard shutting that down. I think that was a decision that took me 2 years to make. And ultimately, I think what I learned is there's all this work that we were putting into the quality of the projects and the details of the projects that on the business side or the communication side, we weren't doing as well as we could have, that ultimately kind of made things really stressful for us and not worth continuing. 'Cause we had like two startups inside of that, which had a lot of promise. They're all bootstrapped and having great success with them. I think what I learned about most out of that was kind of the things happening outside of the actual deliverable that you have to work on. I was mostly focused on our teams and building the products with our teams and the projects. Mm-hmm. And I kind of separated myself too far from the business side of things. And I think going out and after that company closed down, I just did freelancing for myself. Like I didn't realize it at the time when we were closing it down, but yeah, I was a little too separated from the other aspects of making the project successful.
That's tough. But I totally identify with that. I've tried my hand at starting my own web design business back in the days when we called it that. And it was a lot of fun, but I really just wanted to make cool things. And you have to really, to be successful, I think, as a freelancer, you really have to know not just your craft of designing, but you have to know about problem solving, and you have to be scrappy. You have to know a ton of different things. And I think business and sales and accounting are three of the things that are the least favorable things for freelancers to focus on, but yet maybe the most important things. I would say among the most important things, right?
Most definitely.
So I completely identify with that, and yeah, definitely building something and trying to keep it going for that long, and then having to turn the lights off is probably kind of a painful thing.
Yeah, the plus side. I mean, we had employees and had been with us for a long time. Some of them the entire time. It was kind of a letdown for them, but the good thing was I was able to bring a few of them along with me on freelance projects after that. And they're all doing great now.
Love it.
So
love it.
Yeah.
Networking. And that's the thing, like I learned early on in my career to don't burn those bridges. You're going to either bump into that person again somehow, or you're going to work with them in some capacity, or you might, you need their help.
Sure.
Somehow, right? So I think that's one thing about this industry that I love so much is that there really is a tight-knit community, especially the framer community. I mean, I have been astonished, and you're a big part of that too, Jordan. I've been just astonished and blown away at the generosity and the helpfulness and everything. And I think it's a reflection on our industry in general, but I definitely stands out what's going on there in the framer community and kind of what you're doing there with the framer meetup, right, in Seattle?
Yeah, we're on our 12th one, so it's our first birthday here in a couple of days.
Hey, congratulations. Happy birthday, Framer Group.
Yeah, we're getting a cake for it, so we decided I found someone to do the logo as a cake. We were just what
tight.
Silly idea can we do? But yeah, we've gone from like 7 people from the first one to somewhere around like 30 to 40 people show up every month, which is I don't know how we do it, honestly.
That's amazing.
But I think it's just part of the, you know, there's like that spark as a designer when you start to like figure things out and start to dive into those interaction details and start to learn coding that I think is just really exciting. It's a little scary sometimes too. I see some of the kids from UW that come to our meetups and a month later, I'm just like, wow, you built that and all. Like, it's just impressive how quickly start to pick stuff up. And that's kind of, you know, what we try and do there is just foster that ability to learn and ask questions and feel comfortable doing that there. So
that's awesome. I think the cake, the finishing touch on the cake would have to be some sort of animatronic thing, right? So there has to be some sort of element of motion to the cake, right? Other than the motion of people just devouring it, I guess, which would be fine too.
I don't know if that was in our budget or not.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, next year, next 10 years.
Yeah.
Right on. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
Well, nothing too crazy. I guess the one like maybe unique thing was while I was working on the Sway product for Microsoft, I was the single person working on that prototype. So I designed it and built it. And I had not been a part of those type of user testing scenarios often at all. Just being in a startup, it was usually like, here's our budget, we need to ship in, you know, 4 months and do it, we have no time to test. So I was definitely interested in sitting and watching these, and since I built it and designed it, it was hosted on my local server on my machine while I'm watching, and it was fun to be able to watch people do this testing, and they'd hit these little speed bumps that I never even expected that totally would distract from what we actually really wanted to test. And I was able to jump in and fix those things or address those things on the fly in between the user testing in each appointment. So it was pretty cool because it helped us focus on the tests that we were actually trying to run instead of those little issues that were preventing people from getting there. Sometimes it would just be, you know, like a scrolling thing or the button wasn't as big as it needed to be. So they were just missing that, and then we'd go off on a tangent why like they hate when buttons are small and these 14 sites, you know, like just get off track. When you're like, no, there's so much more for you to see. Don't focus on this. But that's honestly, I haven't been a part of too many user tests myself. Most of mine have all been friends and family, or I did a little bit of kind of guerrilla testing, like taking phone prototypes and giving them to people in line at lunch, which a lot of people aren't too interested in that, but
like, they're hungry, man.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to eat, not like complete this 30-second task for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I've just heard some things out there on Twitter. Some people have written some stuff about like, hey, let's quit bothering people at coffee shops to like test our products. But I mean, you know, when you are on a low budget and you just need some quick guerrilla stuff,
yeah.
I don't see any problem with that. I think as long as you're respectful and not annoying and maybe give them something, like give them what they're there for, like a coffee or something. I think that's fine.
I think it's a little different when you're at Microsoft and you go to the Microsoft cafeteria and, you know, there's a level of expectation that you'll help out. But I was surprised how many people are like, no, like, no, I'm just going to wait for my food. I'm like, oh, okay. But
hey, we're helping each other here. Yeah, I know. I totally get it. People are hungry. And yeah, that's the one thing I learned working at McDonald's is just never work. If you can avoid it, don't work for serving hungry people. It's just really, really miserable occasionally. Jordan, what's your design superpower?
I think it'd be along the lines of being able to like focus on smaller details while still seeing the big picture. Whether that's interaction, motion, typography, just design patterns in general, copywriting. I mean, because all those little details add up to define the project as a whole, right? So,
yeah.
And being able to break down complex problems into like simple solvable chunks is, I think, would be another one. I feel like I've been a part of so many projects that I can see different ways to break things down, because we've never in our company or myself, I've never really always approached a project the same way. It's always interesting to hear people's design process and how they approach things. And people will ask me how that is and how I approach things. And it's a hard thing for me to answer because I never feel like I do something the same way. But I think a lot of it's breaking down problems into, yeah, simple chunks.
Yeah, I appreciate that you said that you never solve the same, you never solve problems the same way every time, because there's different problems, right? I mean, if you had a formula, if any of us had a formula that worked on every project, then I don't think that we would be solving problems.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's why, like, if every car was a blue Volkswagen Beetle or a pink Volkswagen Beetle, right? It's kind of like, that's just not realistic. There's a myriad of problems that need to be solved. And I appreciate that you really take a real fine look, and you also keep the big picture in mind. That's really, I think, a great superpower for any UX designer.
Right. And I think some of it's, yeah, being able to look at the bigger picture and find those smaller details as well. How colors and tones of specific screens communicate different things. Like, I'm in a settings area, or I'm in a creation area, or I'm in a consumption mode. And how those things break down too into like forming the whole identity for this product or design.
Yeah, that's great. And you just made me think of this website. I think it's called Little Big Details or Big Little Big Details, I think. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's great. It's this website. It's like a blog, and they exist to really point out those minute details that may not seem like a big deal to the customer, but it's an added touch, and it's something that a designer thought about enough to actually spend the time to implement it and design it for that delight factor. That's that kind of thing. It's like, oh wow, you actually went the extra mile to think of what would happen between these screens loading or things like that. And even like, for example, the play icon up in the in the browser. If it's like, if you're on a media site, it's kind of neat. Or if you pause it, you can see a pause icon
right up.
I mean, things like that. It's really cool. It encapsulates all those little big details. So
yeah, anyway, that's great.
Yeah, throw that out there. What's your design kryptonite, Jordan?
I think it's probably like having too much time on a task. Cause I will start to just get in this, absorption mode where I don't necessarily do too much, but like I tend to like the pressure of time, to make me, and that's probably something I've got from my father and my mother. What my dad told me at our wedding, he got the speech done that day. You know, we're
right.
Probably should have practiced. It went fine, but yeah, I tend to like that pressure to help me make decisions. And then I think like to that is not enough like team feedback. I've always brought in people that help me progress quickly. So, cause I can get a little randomized at times, and, I really enjoy like teaching and learning with another person and bouncing ideas off of each other. And I think that really not having that can be, I kind of just go internal too much and circle around on ideas. And, yeah, I think that would probably be my kryptonite. I just get a bit too curious and self-serving in my work, and it's not, then I end up doing all-nighters to catch up. Mm-hmm. So I've had some great partners like, Andrew Kelly and Trevor Sheridan on projects that, I mean, we could finish each other's sentences. You barely just have to show, like, I think we should do this motion. Oh, were you thinking in the header? I'm like, yeah. So, you know, and then you're just cranking on it. It's just keeping that excitement level up. One of the reasons I've worked on so many different projects, I tend to get bored doing the same thing after too long. So, having someone that can keep that excitement up as well as exciting projects is great.
Yeah, for sure. I have a procrastination problem, but I'll tell you about that later. Okay. So, no, I totally get that. I mean, as designers, we thrive around constraints. And as much as we hate tight deadlines, they can sometimes cause us to produce our greatest work. Yep. Have you noticed that?
Sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of, have you heard of Parkinson's Law?
No, I have not.
It's the adage that work expands to fill the time available for its completion.
Okay.
Right? So it's like, if you have a month, then you probably won't start working on it. You know, if you're like me and it sounds like you are, you may not start working on it until like the third week, because there's other things you could do in the meantime. Right. And so it's sort of like that whole law. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's a really great one to kind of put out there. And I think encourages all of us to keep that in mind.
Yeah. What, like Frank Lloyd Wright, he's probably one of the bigger procrastinators that I know of. That's one of my designers that I look up to, but yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I guess Henry Ford apparently, I'll tell a quick story, I'll try to be quick, but he used to sit in his office every day, and nobody really knew. It was sort of the foundation of Ford, and I could be paraphrasing, but something to the effect of new people, like a new employees would come in through, and they every day they walk by his office, and they just see him staring out the window with his feet up on his desk. And then people started going, what does this guy do? Like, they didn't know who he was. They're like, what does this guy do every day? And then he was thinking of the automobile. It's like, we sometimes need that too, right? We need that time to really think. And it looks like we're not doing anything, but really we could be coming up with something pretty brilliant.
This episode is brought to you in part by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Whether you started as a digital company or not, we're all digital now, and that's been a tough transition for many organizations. Universal Mind helps mid to enterprise-sized companies find and deliver something valuable through design thinking workshops, UX design, and development consulting, and believes in supporting user defenders to help train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com.
This one is a fun one, and I always caveat this question, I try to, with the fact that I know that you've been surrounded yourself with some great people and the people in the Framer community, and so I know you didn't get where you are on your own, but you certainly achieved a great level of success, Jordan. But this is a fun question because it's about your superhero name, and this is also, it also helps me give my artist some concept direction for your superhero artwork. So I would ask you, what would your UX design superhero name be, Jordan?
Yes, I saw this one come across. I knew it was coming. So nice. I was thinking Minutia.
Ooh.
Seemed like a decent one without being too cheesy.
I like that.
Even though that's kind of associated with the fluff of things too, right? Like, it's too detailed, but I think it kind of goes to the smaller details. And, you know, just bigger picture things, like I was mentioning before, like colors, tones, animation, motion, how they communicate. Like Pascal, like I mentioned before, I think he does a great job of that. It's oftentimes not even mind-blowing stuff. It's just putting focus on details that help you communicate and have to do less UI work. Yeah. And I think, like, some of that might be me jumping into teams and pulling out and abstracting out the things that I can contribute to make and shape the product to be better. Yeah, I don't know. How's that sound to you?
No, I love it. I think that's perfect, man. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Jordan?
For me, I've had my fair share of struggles with engineers and developers. So I've taken upon myself to learn languages and to help enable our teams to see through the details we want to see in our projects. And I think, like, I really, out of that, work to simplify the process that the user has to go through to make sure that they have to do less and get on with their task. It reminds me a lot of I don't know if you ever read this, the Defensive Design for the Web book by 37 Signals.
I have not.
They were huge influences of mine. I pretty much read everything that they wrote back. Like, I think I started using Basecamp in 2005 or so. Mm. And the book's really great. It's kind of along the lines of, like, the Don't Make Me Think book. But just, you know, like, they would dive into a flow for booking a flight and just point out all the little gotchas that are in there. And, like, I think that's why I really love prototyping and designing and getting through the interactions early, because they help expose more of those, like, little issues that you don't expect early on before they come up towards the end of the project when you're trying to ship something and you kind of have to, like, put in little fixes or crutches to help you ship on time. And some of those things kind of fall to the wayside, you know? So, yeah. So I think it's mostly picking up some languages and trying to help me be more a part of the team and be able to support the best way I can to see the experience be the best it can.
Very cool. Now, this last question is of this segment is one of my favorites, and it's kind of a big one. But I know you've got your head in a lot of this stuff because you are certainly doing some pretty outstanding work and out-of-the-box stuff, so experiments. So I want to ask you, Jordan, what does the future of UX look like to you?
I think it's a lot less of looking at, like, a terminal, like a phone or a computer, and having, like, this processing device acts more like a slave with, like, secondary things taking the place of what your phone or computer might do. Like, things along, like, VR, augmented reality, along with, like, voice commands. I mean, I hope it's a lot like what I experienced early on in my career, where, I mean, what's exciting right now is there's so many of those new things coming up that back when I started, there was no real, like, solid design or interaction patterns. We were figuring a lot of that stuff out as we went. And that's super exciting to me because I like not having answers and helping figure those things out and exploring and finding the right paths. And so there's no rules there, really. Like, things are being defined still. And that's, yeah, really where I love to be, helping shape and experiment and learn and sharing that knowledge with others. So I hope I have to use my phone and my computer less.
Yeah, let's hope
it's
so.
It's not something I, like, desire at any moment, really, right? And, like, yeah. But they're very helpful, so we have them around all the time. And I hope that that's what it looks like to me. Yeah.
I would agree with you. I think that we're kind of overdosing on screens, as Golden Krishna says. I had him on the show, and he wrote a book called The Best Interface is No Interface, it's a brilliant book. But anyway, I agree with you and with him on those notions where we're eventually going to just have a lot more stuff in front of us, I think, for better or worse, like a Minority Report kind of stuff. So we'll see.
Or the mirror prototype that came out recently. I don't know how much time you spend in front of the mirror, but mine's about, like, 20 seconds, maybe, every morning. I don't know.
But I think that's for the Kardashian girls.
That's the place my wife writes my task list for the day with a whiteboard marker. Like, these are things I need for you to get done. And I'm like, oh, okay, done with the mirror for today. But
that's awesome.
List, right?
Indeed. I'm very familiar with those. So let's wrap up the show with imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
I think it's definitely exploring ideas, using things like Framer to take a concept and explore it and kind of push every angle I can on it to really hone in on what's a great experience, and then testing it in front of people, because and proving myself wrong, or you know, destroying all the assumptions I had. And then like taking that information that I learned and sharing it with others and being able to teach and explain helps me become a better programmer too, because I'm all the stuff I internalize, I have to then explain to someone else and build up a ton of metaphors to designers. I think that's definitely one thing that's helped. And then also by doing that, I'm able to, what do they say? Like a prototype is worth 1,000 meetings.
Yes.
Ability to take like an idea and explain the concepts to others and get buy off quickly. I know when I was working on a iOS component that I was designed, I actually gave to the engineers and they consumed it and shipped it, all something that I built. Like every meeting we had was me showing another prototype, and the it was like scheduled for an hour, and it took like 12 to 15 minutes of mostly people coming in late and then review, and then they're like, cool, so what's next? So it was like none of this, like imagine like a PowerPoint deck with like, imagine a world where you click on this and it slides over and
in a world,
just, bam. Yeah. In a world.
That's so awesome. So I, you know, I'm curious, and I'm going to take a second if I could to kind of go off script here, because I think there's the designers, should designers code, the whole thing out there. And I feel like a lot of our defenders listening are probably similar to me, because after 15 plus years doing this, I'm still not a great programmer. Yeah. I can do HTML, CSS, fairly dangerous on that end. I still have not mastered JavaScript, which I know sure. CoffeeScript is a derivative, which is what Framer uses. But so I want to take a minute here just to kind of talk about this. And I love your insight. I know our listeners would love your insight. And first of all, are you a coder who designs, or are you a designer who codes?
I would say the latter, yeah.
Yeah, designer,
designer
codes.
That codes. I've mostly abandoned design software, and I usually come back to it at the end of my process. Like, first, this interaction has to work for me to even want to make it look nice. So, like, working out those details first tends to be more important for me.
Yeah. So what do you think of the whole should designers argument?
Should designers cook eggs in the morning? I don't know. Like, of course, like, why not? I think there's a lot of, I would always recommend it. I don't see why you wouldn't, unless, I mean, there's all sorts of angles you can take on a design career. So, and specialize in, and the things that interest me are how things work. And I've been a part of enough like projects where you hit those edge cases that you don't expect, and they come up later on in the project and you're scrambling to address them. Mm-hmm. And a big part of prototyping and coding for me, like there's plenty of tools that you can do prototyping. Some of them are more of like the storyboard approach, or the proto board, as I would call it, which you don't really fully get everything right, or you end up in After Effects and it shows the story, but not doesn't really hit the edges of how the thing might work. It's kind of like the happy path. And that's like the one thing I think out of that 37 Signals book, that the offensive design for the web, that was like all about when things go wrong. Like that's what really brings together a whole design that works great, is the times when it's not the happy path. It's the frustrating and horrible path. And you have a way to prevent that, or like have solutions for that. And you can solve those when it's in your it's fresh in your mind when you're solving the design problems. And like, as far as coding, I went and did a certificate for Ruby programming at the UW, and it was probably the hardest thing I ever did. I failed the first time I took it. I passed the first two classes. The third one, I could not do. And I kind of was like, I'll show you guys. And a year later, I finally passed it. But it was...
That's the spirit.
It's not something that came to me naturally. But out of it, I think I gained a lot of influence on my design process too, like defining design patterns. And because I had to create a lot of APIs doing that too, for people to consume what I built and interact with it, that it's designed in a whole different way. It's like an engineer, they need to look at your code and understand what the API is, and you're kind of doing copywriting and the structure, and you have to think about how the user would even use this tool that really is just free to use for any use. There's no real defined use for it. So, should you code? I think it's going to do great things for you as a designer. You're not going to become like an amazing engineer by any respects, but your design abilities will increase a lot, and what you can do and communicate easily. I think that's the biggest thing for me, that it's just allowed me to see through my ideas a lot farther and quicker and explain those to others on the team.
Yeah, I fully agree. And as a designer, it's really empowering to be able to actually create something and go forth on your own and actually get it into a usable prototype. It's really rewarding. It's really empowering. It's really rewarding, especially if you're, like most designers, really particular about those pixels that you laid down, particular yep. about the layout and everything, and wanting it to be as you envisioned and as you spent many hours creating it. And one of my biggest pet peeves, and mostly in the past, this has really improved a lot in my career, the further along I've gotten and worked with different people. But in the past, one of my biggest challenges was spending so much time. And again, we used to make websites in Photoshop and expect them to be exactly like that. Now, one of my biggest challenges was spending so much time making it pixel perfect and then handing it over to a developer and then looking at it in the browser like the day before it's supposed to go live, but when there's no time to change anything, because that's typically what would happen too. I don't know whether that was planned or not, but anyway, just that whole thing of just being frustrated as a designer going, why do I even spend so much time creating this if it's not going to look anything like my envision when it's done?
That's so true. It definitely helps you have a bit more compassion too for the engineers, because you end up struggling.
Right.
It didn't come easy to me either, and it helps you understand the struggles and the constraints that they have to deal with. It's not just this fixed image. It's how does it work? Like where should things happen and at what speed or in which way? And there's a lot of things that they're managing that, like, by doing those things and exploring them yourself, you can help them out a lot.
You know what? I appreciate you mentioning that, Jordan. And I'm kind of humbled by that response, because you're right. I think that designers and developers would work so much better together if there was empathy for each other's disciplines. Because you're right. If we don't know, and that's another thing I think that makes us even better designers, is if we do understand logic, if we do understand what it takes to actually get this design to work in all these different screens now, I think we would have a little more empathy when we're handing off our work to those who have the responsibility of doing that and also trying to make sure it looks like the designer intended it. So, no, I absolutely agree. And I think, again, coming back to should designers code, I think, I hate to say this, it depends, right? But I feel like if you did code, you would at least understand. It wouldn't hurt, and you at least understand more of the process behind what it takes to actually get your design in front of the hands of users.
Sure. Admittedly, it's a frustrating thing to learn at first. And I mean, you're learning the fundamentals of programming. And sometimes that's in a very awkward way from a design perspective. So, I mean, it's just something you have to stick with and – Find someone who's willing to help you bridge those gaps or those understanding, those understandings you don't quite grasp onto yet. And that's a big part of, like, even in our meetups, it's building metaphors for people to help them understand, like, how to even think about what an array is or an object is, and just helps them get a lot farther. So
Now, should designers code, or should they get their BA first?
I do not know how to answer that.
Okay. What's the best path? Here's there you go. This is a question that I have, and this is actually kind of selfish, but I hope that the defenders will gain from this. I think they will. Because, again, I've been trying to, and trying is a very loose term. I've been wanting to get more dangerous in JavaScript and being able to be that designer that can get my ideas, especially the interactive elements, more come to life. But I'm busy. We're busy, right? We're working on stuff. And the moment we open up lynda.com or one of those other great facilities, training facilities out there online, like Front End Masters and things, once we get in there, like, it seems like within the first half hour, there's a distraction, right? There's a deadline. There's a fire we got to put out. Like, that's been, I think it's been partly an excuse for me. But I think it's also, there's a lot of reality to it. What do you think, like, as far as, a busy designer, what's the best path for busy designers who want to learn how to code their designs into prototypes?
So I think a person I shared office with recently, Lauren, she had these designs she already created like a year and a half ago, right? And what she did is decide to take those into Framer and figure out how to actually, she had these flows of these screens and figure out how to actually make them interactive and work between each other and add in some scrolling for the calendars. And through that process, she ended up even like redesigning certain aspects of it because she realized they didn't quite work as she had imagined before she started adding in the interactivity. So I think something that you have that already exists that isn't in that realm of prototyping or having that type of interaction built in, and giving yourself the ability to kind of gradually piece those parts together. And I would always say, like, work on, you know, there's plenty of tools that will do flows for you, but the moment you want to add in another layer to that, it gets exponentially harder for certain tools. But something like Framer, by learning to do flows or make those screens change, you're starting to pick up the basics of like what a layer is, how to do an animation, how to change states in views. And then when you want to add in certain things like draggable properties and the bounds and constraints of where you can drag it, you're already familiar with the tool instead of jumping into being, okay, I have to build these flows, I have to add, you're like kind of bringing too much baggage along. So definitely, like, starting simple and starting with a design that you already have, if possible, or taking an app that exists already and mimicking that, I think is a good thing to do.
Yes.
And keeping it simple, just like, I want to learn how to do flows. Okay, I want to learn how to read click events or, you know, do some shy headers or things like that. Helps you, like I said, kind of just break down the problem, right? And then when you get stuck, just ask questions from people. At least the Framer community is really great.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, people are always, okay, this is a stupid question. So many posts, and people are like, no, it's fine. We've all been there. We've all been there. Like, we started so at that same point. So
Jordan, that's great, great advice. Really, really great. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right?
Yeah,
just keep it
exactly.
Simple and get those little wins, right?
Yep.
Those little happy dances. And it's fun. I've built a couple of really minimal Framer prototypes. It's fun to see your vision come to life and actually be able to put it in somebody's hand, like, seconds after you have it, right? I mean, it's
great.
Magical. Awesome. I'm feeling inspired. I think our defenders are too. So I want to ask you, Jordan, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
I've answered that. Yeah.
I know.
I mean, Framer, it was definitely one of those. I mean, I was doing HTML, CSS, JavaScript prototypes up until, I don't know, 2014 or so. And then I went to ValleoCon and I saw Josh Puckett was doing a presentation at the conference, and the owner of Treehouse, I forget his name at the moment,
Ryan Carson. Yeah.
And he's like, just kind of interjected during his presentation. He's like, Framer. So what's Framer? And he's like, just stay afterwards and I'll show you what it is. And it was still in this very loose form, like no IDE or there wasn't Studio. It was just this JavaScript library, and did this demo of it. And after that point, I was kind of hooked on it. I was like, wow, this is so easy to explain an idea. I don't have to manage HTML and CSS and JavaScript. It's all just, I mean, because I think of it as like a sketch pad. You don't really want to have to manage too many things. You just want to get to the idea and how it should work as fast as possible. And I think it's really great when you're thinking of interaction details. It just doesn't have too many UI elements. They're definitely building on that, which is great for designing in the app. It's kind of getting a little influence from Sketch. Mm-hmm. But I think that's my resource or tool that I can recommend.
I had a feeling it would be, and I was going to say, like, I think I know what the answer to this is, but I didn't want to come off presumptuous. And anyway, I had a feeling.
Like, that and learning like typography and grids, I think, in design is, there's a couple books that I really like is the Grid Systems book by Joseph Mueller Brockman and Jason Santa Maria's Web Typography book is really great. Outside of that, yeah. I know Framer is just like an easy answer, right? So for me,
if you could recommend one book to our listeners, you've recommended a few already, which I'm excited to check out. But if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Yeah. So admittedly, I don't read a lot of books. I probably should more. Like these defensive design ones, it's a lot of pictures with like, hey, don't do this. This is bad. Look at this. Right. But, I think I spend a lot more time exploring ideas, and then like when I start to read is when I'm hitting a wall and I dig into things like algebraic geometry or calculus or like design patterns that people use and their processes. But I do read a lot of documentation, and that's one skill I would say get practice that. It's uncomfortable and hard at first, but if you start to get into wanting to write more code, understanding how documentation works, it helps so much to be able to look at something and understand it immediately. But if I had to recommend one, I think it would, the Defensive Design for the Web. Outside of that, maybe the one I've read recently is The Lean Startup, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of informally taught on the UX side of things, and
many of us are.
Yeah. I mean, that didn't really exist too much back when I started. So like that helped me kind of understand the process a lot better and how to like form user testing and, you know, the build, measure, learn type approach. I think that was a great book that one of my mentors recommended to me.
Awesome. What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes? You've given some really good ones already, but do you have anything else?
Practice a lot and teach. Like you can't always get the projects you want. So you have to find projects you love doing. And whether that's just practicing, exploring, like working in 3D, like Cinema 4D, or just find a project that you like, but you see some problem in it, and then redesign it and like define what the problem is and solve it, and just exercising that muscle. And then by teaching, you kind of force yourself to project your understanding outwards to others and helps you understand it better as well. Cause I know there's been a lot of times I'm like, well, an object works like this. And then you're like, wait a second, does it? And then I'm like, let's try this. You know, I'm like, we're both learning together at the same time. So like it forces you by offering up your knowledge to other people to kind of make sure you truly understand it.
That's great. Awesome. So we actually have a listener question, and thanks to you tagging me in Facebook, I would not have seen this one because I'm not on Facebook that much anymore. But thanks for doing that. And you posted it. Thanks for posting it in the Framer Facebook group too. This question comes from JL Flores Mina. I hope I'm saying that right. But he posted a question, and I thought it was such a thoughtful question and a really good one, I think, for all of us to really consider. He says, "A crucial skill I find in great designers and prototypers is curiosity. How can we inculcate?" I'm not sure what that word means, but it seems like foster, maybe?
I thought it was incubate.
Maybe. How can we incubate a sense of curiosity on others so they can enjoy exploring on their own? And he says, maybe a bit of an abstract question, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. As a designer, I feel like prototyping opened a whole new world to me, but is difficult to replicate the experience on others.
Sure.
We've talked a little bit about this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's different for everyone, and their experiences definitely shape how they might look at beginning to start prototyping, or just where their curiosity lays, right? So a lot of it is, I think, like in our meetups that we do, it's a lot of teaching. We have people that have worked on things that want to show stuff get up, and maybe they've worked with it for a week or like months, or some of us, some of the mentors, Mana, who submitted this question, is actually a mentor, but he'll go up and show things he just figured out, and everyone's just like, wow, how long have you been doing this? And you know, he's like, 3 months or so. But and it's a lot, I think a lot of it's just when they start to show that enthusiasm or interest in it, is getting in there and like kind of being a support for them to push them along and build up that curiosity. And it's not always easy. But yeah, that's a tough question.
It is. I agree, and I think you answered it pretty well too. As UX designers, I think one of the attributes for UX designer is curiosity. Right. So it's like curiosity, passion, and empathy. So the first one really is curiosity. If we're not curious, I don't think we're going to really try to solve problems that much. Yep. But I really think, and this is sort of, sorry to step in on this one, but I feel like maybe even just showing what's possible.
Yep.
I think, right? Like in those kind of settings, like at your group, and I'm sure that's why it's growing very rapidly, is because you guys are there to serve, and you're there to show, like, this is what's possible. And then, you know, kind of like, now go, off you go. Like let's see what you do with this, because we're all creative. We all have different ideas. And that's what I love about what you guys are doing with the group, and what Cohen and all the incredibly smart guys and Framer are doing with this product as well.
Yeah, we started off some of our meetups more like doing presentations, like 30 minutes each for 2 hours, and kind of had this shift maybe 4 months in, and where we're like, we, you know, there's just a lot of people just staring there being like, this is crazy, I could never do this, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of switched it to like, let's just do quick rapid fire like demos. Like, nice. I made this game, blah blah blah. I'm using this sprite library that Jordan made, or that Isaac made for animation. And the amazing thing is, a lot of the mentors have contributed modules and code at this meetup for these people to use to help push them along farther. But we kind of shifted it to like, let us show you what a layer is. And everyone open up your laptop, and we're all going to go together.
Nice.
And then we'd break into, you know, the basics, and then there'd be like the experts where you're talking about how do we form classes and deal with events, and then some people in the middle that are like, I want to understand a little more about how states work, or kind of a medium level. And I think that's been, it's got more people involved, that's for sure. It's pretty great.
That's awesome. Jordan, as we close, can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about? And I know you said you might not be able to talk about it, but I thought I'd ask anyway.
Let's see. Yeah, I can't.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm gonna go to the second string.
Okay.
Which is I'm working on for Framer this input field module, which seems really like simple, but hooking into devices so that when you're prototyping, you can actually use photos or videos or files from your phone or computer to bring them in. Say you want to work on a photo filter type of app, or you want to do like a receipt scanning app, like just being able to like take a photo from your phone and see it show up in your prototype and not be this kind of staged. That stuff always kind of feels a little hokey to me. Mm-hmm. So, see it in real life. And then you kind of like, you're like, oh, I'm in a dark room. Okay. That makes me think of like a few things we need to solve from a design perspective. Like, do we want to add contrast abilities to this, or is that something to talk with the engineers about? So, I've written quite a few modules and I'm excited about getting that out, because every time I release something, like I just put a test out the other day for that photo module and like two people already made new prototypes on it. I'm just like, guys, it's not even done yet. Like, I was just asking for feedback before I released the final thing. And people are like, for some reason, the photos, you know, on the phone when I take it in portrait mode flip sideways. I'm like, yeah, because I'm not done, but they're like still going ahead with it. So, which is awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Exciting.
So that's, you know, putting things out to the community and then seeing them used and immediately, which is super exciting. So,
yeah. Well, I can tell you, I tried that prototype and I wasn't expecting my picture to show up.
Awesome.
And the thing, I was blown away. I was like, this is magical, man. So that's great. Thanks for sharing your work. Thanks for being so generous to the community, Jordan.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I mean, I love doing this stuff, and I hope your the listeners can gain some insight.
Oh, I know it. I know they will. I've learned a ton myself. But I want to ask you, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you before we go?
Most likely, it would be Twitter, at Jordan Dobson. My website's in progress right now. So as it always has been, like, I haven't had a solid portfolio since I closed down the company. It's just been word of mouth. So Twitter's probably the best right now.
Nice. Yeah, the cobbler's son has no shoes.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Jordan, I just want to thank you so much for being here on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor chatting with you. And I just want to say fight on, my friend.
All right. You too, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
Take care.
Love that interview with Jordan. I believe that we can learn anything if we truly desire to. If you haven't already, I highly encourage you to take that challenge and dive into prototyping. Prototyping is one of my favorite parts of the design process, and there are so many tools out there now to facilitate this. There's nothing like watching your design come to life and being able to place it in someone's hand to observe them using it. I know there's a lot out there, so I just want to take a second to thank you so much for spending this time with me, listening and talking about the show on Twitter. I don't take it for granted, so I just want to thank you so much for that. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.